You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Natalie Golay. I recently visited Fun Again Games in downtown Ashland during its weekly board game night. My visit was inspired by Tim Clare's engaging and insightful book, Across the Board, which explores board games as a uniquely human endeavor. I was curious how well Clare's insights matched up with the experience of our local gaming community. I spoke with assistant manager Tim McElroy about board games, their surge in popularity, how new approaches to game design are revolutionizing the medium, and whether games foster a sense of community. Game night regulars Masha Andres and Tyler Posey also shared their thoughts.
Okay, Tim, tell me about Fun Again Games.
We are nearing our 30-year anniversary, and we have a sister location in Eugene, Oregon, but this is the original store. We used to be located on the other side of town, but we moved downtown near the Oregon Shakespeare Festival about 7 years ago.
And how long have you been working here?
I've been involved with Fun Again Games for about 4 years. I started off helping them run their kids D&D program, and then about 6 or 7 months after that, they hired me on as the assistant manager. So now I've been here working for about 3.5 years.
How did you get started with games?
I honestly can't remember a time in my life that I wasn't playing games, but one of my earliest and fondest memories of gaming was playing this goofy dice rolling game called Pass the Pigs, where you roll pig-shaped dice and you score based on how they land. And I used to play that with my parents. We'd go to this diner in my hometown and just play that game for hours. It was a lot of fun.
Did they boink as you rolled them? Did they have any sound effects?
If only technology had hit that level, but no, unfortunately not. We would often make the noises, though.
Are you primarily interested in board games, or do you also enjoy video games?
I'd say it pretty equally. I've been playing board games my whole life, but some of my most formative gaming experiences were video games. Stuff like Super Smash Brothers, Pokemon. I used to play this game called Morrowind, one of the Elder Scrolls series, and it was one of my favorite games as a kid.
What are some of your current favorites?
My partner and I play a lot of a game called Cascadia. It's a tile drafting game. We're trying to make the perfect national park, and it is addictive. We've been playing it for 3 years now. It was Game of the Year 2022, and it's still our favorite.
I think we can all say we know a game when we see one, but coming up with a definition that applies to all games isn't easy. And what makes them unique to humans? After all, play is common to most, if not all, animals. When does play become a game? In his introduction to Across the Board, Tim Clare quotes philosopher Bernard Suits, who offers this simple definition. Quote, "Playing a game is the voluntary attempt to overcome unnecessary obstacles," close quote, which is a wonderful way to put it, if somewhat incomplete. Ultimately, Clare seems to conclude, among other things, that games are uniquely human because they require the conscious suspension of disbelief. It's not just about problem-solving or indulging in the dopamine-releasing adrenaline rush of risk-taking, although these are features of both games and play. According to Clare, quote, "When we step into a game, some rules about life and how we ought to behave get temporarily suspended. We're granted permission to care about things we wouldn't ordinarily care about and do things we wouldn't ordinarily do," close quote. Tim, what do you think of this idea?
I think that it is extremely poignant. I think that the beauty of games is it creates an opportunity for people of any race, any social level, any differentiation to meet on a common ground where everyone is sort of on a base function even. And when everyone's able to meet there, you're able to create these interactions that really can't exist anywhere else in life. But there are also great opportunities for people to build emotional intelligence, to get over their fear of failure, to test boundaries, to, as you said, do things that normally they wouldn't care about. But maybe through that, they learn a passion for something that they never knew they had. My partner loves video games, but was never that much into board games until she and I started dating. I taught her some games, especially Cascadia, which I had mentioned, and now she adores board games. So sometimes you just need that one experience, that one positive experience to completely change how you see the world.
The suspension of disbelief is a characteristic that games share with good fiction, like a good novel, a good book. One difference I see is that fiction that is meant to be read is an internal experience, whereas a game externalizes that experience. But what about people who enjoy games by watching others play? In a way, it seems analogous to watching a movie or a play. What do you think that's all about?
I think that it makes sense to me that people enjoy watching others experience games and the sort of myriad thrills and emotional connections that they create for streamers. A lot of what made video game streaming so popular initially was horror games and watching people play through a game that they themselves would maybe not have the same level of enjoyment or would not be able to put aside their own fears to enjoy, because it's a whole different experience of the controlling it versus watching someone. I think with games like that, the part of the joy is a combination of seeing the reaction of the people playing it is funny, but also the kind of safety of having someone else at the holding the reins while you still get to experience that world and that setting. As for like D&D streams, I think it makes sense that watching people perform, like groups like Critical Role and Dimension 20, they do basically theater, just in most of it's improv. You know, it's they have the dungeon master, be it Matt Mercer or Brennan Lee Mulligan, they create a world and a story, but the players get to sort of live out this fun and very improvised storytelling. And I think people definitely connect to good performances, but even less emotive, less, I guess, for better lack of a better word, charismatic D&D productions, I think having the safety again of watching other people do it so that you can kind of build up a level of understanding, a level of security without being on the spot yourself. I think it makes sense that holds a lot of value for people. And some people just don't have the attention span to do it themselves. But when they have the enjoyment of seeing someone that they like or they care about doing it, it allows them to connect in a way that they wouldn't themselves maybe have in that moment. I think it speaks a lot to people's empathy as well. They can really connect with these other people, where for them, it might feel like it's just, you know, paper and dice. But when they see people living that experience, that's when it starts to hold meaning for them.
Right. So it helps them be part of that suspension of disbelief. I mean, they join the fantasy. They join the escape without actually participating physically in the game.
Exactly. I think that human element adds a lot to people's enjoyment and trust. You know, when they see that other people are enjoying it, it makes them feel safe to enjoy it too.
You're listening to The Jefferson Exchange. I'm Natalie Golay. I recently spoke with Ashland's Fun Again Games assistant manager, Tim McElroy, and local gamers Masha Andres and Tyler Posey.
So, Tim, today is Thursday, and I see you're getting ready for board game night. Can you explain what that is?
Yes, every Thursday from 5 to 8, we run a open family board game night. Anyone is welcome to come enjoy free of charge. We have a whole library of demo games people can play, and our regulars often bring some of their favorites. We'll see new ones periodically, but people have a lot of favorites, too, that they'll bring in.
And is everyone welcome to board game night?
Well, we encourage people of all ages to come. We have games for kiddos, games for adults. There's something for everybody here.
What about people like me who like games or the idea of games but don't have a lot of experience playing? Can I just come in as a newbie and participate?
Absolutely. And we almost every Thursday have one of our employees there to help host and teach games. So if you're new and are a little worried about learning games, there's no stress. We're happy to teach them.
And is there a difference between tabletop games and board games?
Yes, in the way that all frogs are toads, but not all toads are frogs. All board games are tabletop games, but not all tabletop games are board games, because role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons exist. I'd say that's the biggest differentiation, but it's also card games have their own subgenre where you could consider them board games, but a lot of times they don't technically use a board. You know, games like, you know, Rummy, classics like poker, they don't technically need a board, but board games have become sort of the umbrella term for not video games, which is useful.
Hi, Masha. How long have you been coming to board game night here at the store?
Yes, my husband and I moved down to Ashland from Portland about 3 years ago and very quickly found a community here at the local board game store. So we've been attending the weekly board game nights for the past 3 years fairly regularly.
What originally drew you to games?
I'm a neurodivergent individual, and so analytical mindset and pattern recognition has always appealed to me, and that is very prominent in board games. And so back, I think, when I was a teenager and I was looking for spaces where I could fit in. I encountered board game community and board games, specifically heavier board games. And not only did I find an outlet for the way my mind works, and but I also found a community of people who I felt like I fit into. And it was an easy social interaction over a board game.
Tyler, what brings you to board game night?
I just enjoy the ritual. I really enjoy that every Thursday at 5 p.m., there's a group of people I know and a group of people I don't know, and I'll get to know very quickly, and we bond over a shared activity. I've also noticed, because I work weekends, this is effectively my Sunday, going into the week having already started basically a mental workout, I've actually gotten better at my job, or at least more attentive while I'm there than if I just couch potatoed for 3 days.
What I hear you saying is that although it's about play, it's also a way to remain mentally engaged and alert.
Well, absolutely. I think a healthy sense of play is necessary in any avenue of life. This is true even on a biological level. We see animals play with each other to prepare for the world ahead. That's not exclusive to humans. Games can really make you think about strategy, make your brain work in ways that it doesn't typically work. I don't typically think about resource management outside of Thursdays at 5 at Fun Again, but that part of my brain working keeps me alert in other ways that I'm not actively thinking about, and it keeps me sharp and it keeps me present.
What are you going to play tonight?
You know, the beauty of Thursday night game nights is I don't know. I don't know until I sit down with Philippe and Masha and Rich and everyone else who comes in, and we decide in that moment what we're going to play. We bring our own games in. The store has a wonderful supply of demo copies. There are so many possibilities. I don't think about it in advance. I try to go whatever's in the moment.
Tim, what I'm hearing is this is a community building exercise in a way, where game enthusiasts and newcomers can socialize, make connections, and have fun. Is that right?
Spot on. It's a great way for people to come socialize, learn new games, maybe even just test out to see if they like games in the first place. We've had people of all sorts come through. We also do, every month we do a Blood on the Clock Tower night, which is a very fun social deduction game. It's a little bit more interpersonal than most of our games, and that has been a huge success.
So Tim, I asked you to check out Claire's book in preparation for this interview, and he talks about this in his intro. What do you think of the idea of games fostering community?
I think that's one of the most valuable things about games in general, is that they create a space that people can connect and find a common purpose or goal, whether it's competitive or cooperative. We all find ourselves wanting the same thing, which is very counter to how most people interact in life. There's basic needs that align, but everyone has their own goals. In board games, it creates a clearer, more simple goal for you to find and an opportunity for people to start from the same place and try to reach that goal.
It seems like there's just been this resurgence of popularity in board games.
I think there's a few reasons for this, but one of the big ones is, I think, living in a semi-post-COVID world where people have been forced to not being able to interact other than through digital means. I think that this need for that in-person connection has really pulled towards game experiences like board games, because it's something that people can share in person and has that kind of personal connection to it. But even with that, I think that with board games, there is an element to the sort of hands-on control that it provides when playing games, that you feel like you're in charge. You feel like you have this level of sort of captainship over the game that video games sometimes deny you. So, you know, when everything's automated, everything is provided for you, it can be convenient, but sometimes it lacks that je ne sais quoi, that texture. I think that board games provide that. On top of it, I think that there is an interesting overlap between the board game and video game world.
We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back with Fun Again Games Assistant Manager Tim McElroy. And we're back. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Natalie Golay. Just before the break, we were discussing the overlap between board games and video games with Fun Again Games assistant manager Tim McElroy.
The last few years especially, we've seen games that were originally made as video games ported into the board game format and have had even more success as board games, and vice versa. Games like Gloomhaven, which is a fantastic game, but it is like half an hour of setup, usually bare minimum, and it's long sessions of gameplay, and the kind of thing that is easier when it's automated. So it's interesting how the two have crossed over and have successfully not only breached each other's fields, but having enhanced the experience. For example, there's a game named Dorf Romantic, which is a kind of a cooperative tile placement game where you're trying to essentially build a cohesive map together. That was originally a video game. It had pretty good success. It was popular. But as a board game, it won the Spiel des Jahres, which is like the Game of the Year award the year it came out. And games like Slay the Spire, incredibly popular solo play deck builder, is now a multiplayer board game and is selling like crazy. Fantastic design.
It seems like there's so much more choice today than just a few years ago.
I think that just the sheer variety of themes and mechanics kind of are indicative of a growing player base of interest, because there are games now for pretty much every conceivable concept. It's part of the fun of games. In fact, he mentions it in his book about how pretty much any concept you can think of probably has some game form of it now. Some of the most popular games are silly things like being a cat lady, where you're just collecting cats and trying to give them costumes and feed them. One of my partner and I's favorite games is Cat Lady. Games like Decorum and Verdant are games where they're about designing your house. Decorum is a competitive one where you're trying to out-design the other players. Verdant is trying to create a synergistic house of lighting for your different plants. There is such a wide variety of different interests. Another one that has been a huge seller for us was Flamecraft, which is sort of a more modern take on Monopoly, very like, you know, marketplace focused, but it's just cute little dragons. And each of them, you're trying to assign a job based on the affinity that they have. Fire dragons are good at cooking. Gem dragons are good at jewelry. The theming is kind of self-evident of that growing diversity.
So game design is getting more sophisticated. It's not necessarily about conquering all the territory or killing your enemies to level up. There are more options now. Are the differences merely superficial, or has there been a fundamental shift?
Absolutely. In fact, for one of the more recent examples, Catan, there's a new version of Catan called Catan New Energies, and it's all about encouraging clean energy usage in a more modern setting of Catan. That I think is pretty good example of that. Another one of my favorites, Ark Nova, has two scoring methods, as a commercial appeal and a conservation score, depending on if you want it to be more of a zoo or more of an animal sanctuary. And yeah, there's an interesting broadening of values based on how games score and like the purpose of games. Dorf Romantic, you know, for returning to that, is purely cooperative. How well can we work together to build a cohesive map? Ironically, it's kind of the capitalistic ideal actually working, where the more varied and the more effort people put into it, the better games we get. Rather than seeing just more iterations of the same concept, people are being creative and taking risks and trying out new concepts, and it creates a better environment and better games, while still having the opportunity to build on the classics and find new uses for those mechanics.
Tyler, tell me, what are the most satisfying games that you play? What do you like best?
Well, I look at screens all day for work. I try not to look at screens when I'm not at work. I really enjoy board games specifically, where a sort of narrative forms through the game structure. Maybe I'm the bad guy this game. I got a really early lead, now everyone's teaming up to take me down. Or I'm the underdog. I really got a bad start and had to claw and fight my way back to the top. You see these sort of sub-narratives form that aren't necessarily built into the game, but form just because we're humans talking at a table. Normally, though, I do try to start with a light game. I call them aperitifs, or I don't know if aperitif is the right word, but I'm using it anyway. That little tiny snack of a game, typically something cooperative. It's nice to start on a positive. There's a wonderful game, if you like poker, called The Gang. It's 3 to 6 players. You're ordering poker hands from strongest to weakest. You can't talk. You have to communicate using poker chips. And I've noticed that when we start with a game like that as a little icebreaker, we start to think about how the other players think. It makes the next game we play that much more engaging because we aren't going in going, oh, I forgot how this person typically plays games. We had that little break into the action, and it makes the next game that much more satisfying.
Masha, even if community is the aspiration, the gaming world can feel like a closed club to some. There can be gender bias and other biases that keep people out or make them feel uncomfortable. Have you experienced any resistance as a woman?
I think it's all about finding the right people. I went to an engineering school. I am now in AI. So I've been in male-dominated fields my whole life. Unfortunately, that's just where my interests lie. So I have faced bias, you know, my entire life in many different aspects. And I think, unfortunately, board games is not excluded out of that, especially when I moved to Portland and when I was looking for a group. And Portland has a very large board gaming community. Some were a lot more welcoming than others. Some were, unfortunately, very sexist towards in their comments and remarks. So I think, as with many other spaces, it's about finding the right people. People who are inclusive, people who are welcoming of all genders, you know. Those groups also tend to be a lot more queer friendly and just better people to be hanging out with anyway. So I think, yes, it does exist, unfortunately, but if you find the right group, it can be a wonderful fit no matter who you are.
So that's your experience as a gamer. But what about developers and designers? Do you think having more women in their ranks is a factor in the gaming renaissance we've been talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, as with many aspects of life, I think women and all people belong in everywhere. And the more we can include people of various backgrounds, various gender identities in different aspects of life, the better it makes it for all of us. And I think games are no exclusion to that. So I think as we've had more women or female designers and board game developers come to the and get signed and, you know, get published, we have seen that the games have become more inclusive. They've also just introduced variability to accommodate a lot more players. You know, back in the day, we were limited to just a handful of board games like Catan and Ticket to Ride. But nowadays we have so many genres of board games that no matter what your skill level is, what you're looking to get out of the board game, if you're looking for beautiful design, beautiful art, very inclusive theme, you can find now a game that will fit that. And I think that is largely due to having that variety and that inclusivity in the space of developers. You know, that's where it all starts. So I think, yeah, as with many aspects of life, women just belong everywhere in all spaces.
You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Natalie Golay. I recently visited Fun Again Games in downtown Ashland and spoke with assistant manager Tim McElroy, as well as local board game enthusiasts Masha Andres and Tyler Posey.
Claire notes in his book that the complexity of some of the more elaborate board games can be a turnoff for especially new players. They want to play, but they don't want to learn hundreds of rules just to get started. Tim, what are your thoughts? Are there ways those players can get involved and have fun while they learn?
We have the incredible resource of YouTube and YouTube tutorials on games. I've played many, many, many board games, and many of them you sort of intuit rules as you've played others, but I still watch a tutorial for every single one I learn. Just seeing it in motion helps me download the concept and sort of jump right into the play experience in a way that reading a pamphlet never has for me. There's also a resource he mentions in his book called Board Game Geek, which is an incredible site, sort of Yelp meets Wikipedia for board games, where you can look up like what style of games. Is it a deck builder? Is it a worker placement? Is it, you know, resource management focused? You can kind of get the sort of bullet point concepts, and then reading through, they often have a really solid description of what the play pattern will be like. So you can see, if is this something that I might like? And then once you think that you do, YouTube tutorials will get you where you need to be. They're incredibly helpful.
So what was that resource again?
It's called Board Game Geek. You can type it in, just the site's name, Board Game Geek. And often if you put it the name of the game, say Cascadia, Board Game Geek, or BGG, it'll be the first thing to pop up. It's an incredibly well-used site. People from all over the world, hundreds of thousands of reviews on games. If you're ever looking for feedback on a rule, often you can find those rulings just from the people that have responded on Board Game Geek.
And for people who want to learn in person or who want to meet up with the gaming community here in Ashland, they can come to Board Game Night, right? Which is when?
So every Thursday from 5 to 8, we host our Board Game Night, open for anyone and everyone who'd like to come and play. We have games of our own. You're welcome to bring your own. And there's always people here looking for a good time and to learn new games.
And I understand you have other regular events throughout the week here at the store.
Yes, yeah, so we host Kids D&D from Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and then we also have Magic the Gathering events on the weekends, Friday and Saturday, as well as events for other trading card games like Lorcana, Star Wars Unlimited, and we've had a few others.
Where can listeners learn more?
You can look us up on the internet, funagangamesashland.com and funagangameseugene.com.
So, Tim, 'tis the season. It's getting chilly outside, evenings are getting longer, days are shorter. My last question is, do you have any games that you would recommend for this holiday season?
Yeah, so some great games for the holidays. The most played game on Board Game Geek right now is a game called Slip 7. It's a pretty simple but really fun card game. It plays like a combination of blackjack and Uno, where you're trying to push your luck to get as many points as you can. And you have interaction cards like forcing people to flip additional cards or freezing them and ending their turns. The first person to collect 200 points wins. Super easy to learn. Very, very addictive game. Another really fun one is called Codenames. Kind of a tried and true word association game where you'll have two teams with a series of different words. And there's a code giver for each side who's trying to give associative words and a number attached to how many of your words attached to that word. And your players have to guess and see if they can guess your words correctly. It's a lot of fun and it's very easy to learn. One of my personal favorites is a game called Cascadia. It was the game of the year of 2022. Super fun, very easy to learn tile drafting game where you're trying to create a cohesive national park based on your environments and the animals that inhabit it. Absolute blast of a game, and it plays 1 to 4 with an expansion that adds up to 6 players. Last but not least, one of my absolute favorites, a game called Dixit, which plays very similarly to games like Apples to Apples and Cards Against Humanity, but it is played around a series of beautiful abstract art cards themed after tarot designs, where you will have a number of them in hand, and on your turn, you are the storyteller. You have to choose a card, come up with your own clue for it, and play it face down, and everyone tries to pick a card to counter yours, trying to match the same theme. They're all shuffled up and flipped, and you're trying to get your other players to guess, at least one of them to guess correctly, but if everyone votes for your card and no one votes for your card, you get no points. You have to thread the needle. It's very fun, very creative, and very psychology-focused. It's a blast.
So I actually met my husband through board games back when I moved to Portland for a job opportunity. That was actually my first time in Portland. I didn't know anyone in town. And since I had a board gaming community established prior to that in California, that's where I went to look for new communities and new friends. And it just happened to be that on the night that I walked into this board game bar, Philippe was there with his regular game group, and you know, they were very welcoming and started including me in their weekly games. And one thing led to another, and now we've been together for 8 years with a baby on the way. And board games, you know, not only started our relationship, but became one of the cornerstone things in our relationship. And I think really helped us connect and bond over similar passions.
And that's it for today's JX. I want to thank Tim McElroy, Masha Andres, and Tyler Posey for sharing their passion for board games and helping us understand the unique role of games in human society. You've been listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Natalie Golay. Andrew Crackle was engineering today. You can find this conversation and more at jeffexchange.org
or wherever you get your podcasts.